Good morning, everyone. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here.
We begin, as always, by acknowledging that Film Picnic is recorded on the ancestral lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. This land is referred to as unceded territory as it was not given up freely and continues to be home for the Indigenous communities from which it is stolen.
Yes, it is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land.
A perfect way to start. I love starting that way.
Yeah.
We have a brief announcement. If you are in the UBC community, one of our, I would say more, I think...
One of our friends,
yeah. Our friend Kermode has tuned in every single episode. Our friend Kermode, if you're in the UBC community, is running a directed studies seminar. I'm going to read their little blurb just to get the word out there. Gonzo Cinema is the best seminar this world will ever see.
Go Kermode.
It is where we will find Gonzo. It is the weird, the wacky, the tacky, the crazy, and the unwatchable. We will talk about everything there is and save the world simultaneously. We will also watch movies along the way. Join the bestest seminar today, because there's no tomorrow. Long live Gonzo. So if you are a UBC student and you're looking for a really interesting cinema seminar, trying to say that type five times fast.
Goodness, tongue-tied this morning.
Cinema seminar. You get 3 credits from it. There's no prerequisites, and it's for upper years. So we'll be posting a little graphic about it. But yeah, if you're looking for a really interesting little film discourse, keep Gonzo Cinema in mind.
And students do seminars. It's kind of like what we're doing with the show. We're doing a directed studies. We get credit for this. Not that that's the only reason why we're doing this show in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, other students can get credit by teaching a seminar to other students. So yeah.
Which is just a really interesting way to kind of engage with your community, which is awesome.
Speaking of engaging with the community.
My segue. Today we're talking about the episode title is pitching your project and pitching yourself. Really, I think the roadmap that we're just trying to lay out is entering the industry, proving your value, and being able to communicate that value to others and how that can be instrumental in getting yourself started in the world of film, because that's something that Han and I are engaged with right now.
100%. And I remember before even going into film, kind of the sentiment there was, wow, that's a really hard industry to get into. How are you going to do that? And while it definitely, you know, there's a barrier to jump over to get into it, I think it's not as elusive and mysterious as many people might think. So we want to unpack that a little bit today.
Yeah. Just to start, I think we want to talk a little bit about what it means to pitch yourself. Mm-hmm. What, you know, what kind of value do you contribute to the environments that you're in? Is it clear what you want to do and how you can make it happen?
We touched on it a little bit last week with Grace about talking about pitching for Crazy Eights, which if you haven't listened to that episode, go listen to it.
It's fantastic. Grace was fantastic.
But yeah, we were talking about how to make your pitch most interesting to people, how to like really, and I think what we kind of talked about was you are pitching your film, sure. Say you have a film, a project, whatever, but really, what's most important in a lot of pitches is who are you to be making this project? What experiences have you had? What type of person are you to work with? And why does this story need to be told now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you know, especially when you're in a kind of competitive pitching forum environment, if you don't know those things, it becomes very obvious. And it's about communicating your passion to the audience and whoever you're trying to bring on board for your project. Because if you yourself don't know why it is significant to you, why the story needs to be told now, how are you going to get other people involved and get them on board for what
you're doing? And I also just want to emphasize here that I think I said this in our first episode, but I'd be coffee chatting, I'd be networking, I'd be talking to people, and I always ask them, you know, what do you value most in somebody that you work with or who works under you? And usually the answer is someone who is willing to make mistakes, someone who is willing to learn, someone who is pleasant to work with and committed to what they're doing. And a lot of them have said to me outright, you know, someone might have a great resume, but they might be a white man who has had the privilege of being offered experiences in the past, but maybe is not a pleasant person to work with on set. And that translates, and that...
It does impact huge whether impact. Or not you're getting the job, or if you're getting the job. I feel like sometimes I describe it as rebound, but it's like the... Or maybe like a vine swinging metaphor is more appropriate here, you know? Like you go to a set and then that set becomes your next opportunity.
Always. So. Every single set that I've been on has led to the next set that I've... Mm-hmm. The next opportunity, the next project that I've done. For example, again, I said this in the first episode, it's always important to let people know what you're interested in.
Absolutely.
The first set that I ever was on, It's a Wonderful Knife, I was in
Justin Long. Okay,
literally, no, literally, I was in hair and makeup with Justin Long, and he was, like, asking me questions.
Exciting. Amazing.
And I was, you know, I was talking about how I'm in film school and I'm really interested in producing. And he was like, oh my God, you're interested in producing? You should talk to the producer, Amanda. So he introduced me to Amanda.
Amazing.
And I love Amanda. That relationship, I got her email and we were able to build a relationship there. But beyond that, I also was talking to the rest of the cast about what I was interested in and how I was interested in producing. And from there, a few months later, I was asked to produce a film for Crazy Eights because I shared that news. And then because of Crazy Eights, it's a knock-on effect.
It's the vine swinging.
Yes.
You swing from vine to vine to vine.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. I will say, just to commend you, Hannah, I think you are one of...
Stop it.
I think you're just... You've taken all the negative connotation out of networking for me. I feel like you, especially, just watching you work and watching you, like... honestly and earnestly connect with people that you are working with has been so nice, because I'm like, oh wow, you can create opportunities for yourself and essentially network in a way that doesn't feel
it's not
slimy.
And it's literally, that's the thing, like networking is such a dirty word, and that's why we like to use the word connecting, because and we'll get into this talking about like our own circles within school, but we're not just networking with people that are 10 years into the industry and are you know way so many positions above us or beyond us. It's like connecting with those people, asking those questions, really earnestly being like, I actually look up to you and I would love to learn. I'm so curious to know about how you got to the place you are. Not, hey, can you hire me?
You know,
that's not what it's about at all. And those connections will last a really long time. And 10 years down the line, you are then maybe in that position where you can work with that person in the future.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not the whole purpose of networking. But...
Well, it's
Yeah.
Us making more and more high-pitched noises.
But it's about, building community.
Yeah. I think, like, something that has been really beautiful. I mean, we'll go into, in just a second here, kind of, like, the communities and the ways that we've been able to kind of get our foot in the door in some sense. But, I think it's just been really beautiful to watch even... you know, like the communities, the different kinds of communities you can find like within the world of film, because at the end of the day, filmmaking is storytelling.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can find, there's so many ways to build community, like going to theaters, or, you know, there's people that are in your geographic location, or you can find people that you have common identities with, you know, be it like
Facebook groups.
Yeah. Or people like special interests. Like, are you looking for specific support from a project? Are you able to I think we're very lucky to be in a city like Vancouver that has so many people that are looking for community. I can imagine
so many people, and also Vancouver is like the obvious the longer you're in a place the smaller it feels. But like the industry in Vancouver, there's a lot going on, but it's so small, everybody knows each other. And to that sentiment, I have a little personal anecdote that I'm gonna dance around.
Please.
I was at dinner last night with some friends.
Okay.
And we are talking about the projects that we're making next year for our, you know, we're in fourth year, we're doing our thesis films, and we're talking about crew. And
I'm going to interrupt you and say this was a dinner for the POV Film Festival that Hannah beautifully finessed and organized, and she wasn't going to say that she... You know what? Just to give yourself the credit, Hannah organized an entire film festival, and this dinner was to celebrate that. So, on air, Hannah deserves celebration.
Thank you so much.
Humble queen.
Thank you so much. I was trying to save the people at the dinner from exposing them, but that's okay. You're exposed.
My God. Okay.
Kidding.
Well,
no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm joking. There's no expose here. But we were talking about...
Let's celebrate all of you.
Let's celebrate all of us. Congratulations to us all.
Truly. Please continue.
Yeah, we were talking about who we wanted to have in certain roles next year, because there are 6 films being made, and I think, yeah, 2 of us filmmakers were there, whatever. Mm. Someone was talking about having someone that we had worked with in the past in a specific role and they wanted, and asked another person on the table, do you want to work with them? Mm. And it actually opened up a major, major, major discussion about respect and the way that people are treated on set. And what became apparent...
Okay, please speak on this.
What became apparent was that this individual had been treating certain directors with the utmost respect and patience and, like, enthusiasm to work with, but then was treating the rest of the cast and crew, in particular the women in film production, with absolutely no respect. As if we didn't know what we were talking about, telling us how to behave on our own film sets, mm. was basically shitting on our whole program and just not being a pleasant person to work with, and was actually making a lot of people feel very belittled and stupid.
And what do we take away from
that? And what we take away from that is that it is a small world. It's a small and when world. You treat people poorly, that translates. It doesn't matter if you kiss the ass of the producer or the director, if you're not treating their, especially I think our cohort at UBC has a very, very wonderful culture of respect and how we like to treat each other. So this director hearing that was like, wow, that's actually a really real problem for me, because I don't want people on my set that are going to be really, really, really nice to me and then treating the people that I work with not kindly. And so what I take away from that is, when you are not a pleasant person to work with, when you're treating people with disrespect, it doesn't matter who they are. If they're a PA, if they're getting your food, if they're getting your coffee, it's so, so, so important to treat people with kindness and respect, because you don't know who they're friends with. You don't know who they're talking to. You don't know what their next project is going to be.
You know, this is so, I feel like this is so actually pertinent to something that I was watching a video essay on yesterday.
Okay.
There's a great little online has been a great place to find film community. I'll say that as well.
Yeah. Any community.
Just like any community, but really industry professionals that are working and are making money by teaching courses on filmmaking in their spare time. Mm. There's a wonderful program called the Independent... I'm pretty sure it's called the Independent Film School. Anyways, I was watching this... I get emails from them, but okay. I was watching this video about indie production and, you know, like micro budgets versus big commercial productions. And they were saying, like, one of the most common mistakes that people make is allocating all the money on indie budgets or indie film sets for the key roles. And she was like,
do you mean like paying the key crew members and not paying
The people that are doing really,
and that happens a lot, like you get to indie sets where certain people are being paid and then other people are working for free, which happens, but like
I think it kind of connects to what you were just saying too about, like, I mean, there's obviously, like, respect or financial compensation, like,
just respect people's time and
work. Just because
there's
a hierarchy on the set doesn't mean that you are not all just people.
Exactly.
You are not all just individuals who deserve to be treated in a respectful manner.
100%.
And compensated and, you know, those kinds of things. Like, it's, anyway, it was just reminding me of that.
Yeah.
to reset her a little bit. That was beautiful.
Little lovely anecdote there.
I mean, entirely important to mention. Pitching yourself.
Yeah.
We are going to go into, you got to find a way into filmmaking somehow.
Yeah.
Develop your skills, meet people, and then use those skills or the people that you know. Mm-hmm. And not use the people, but use the connections that you're making.
Yeah.
Use the resources that you have to make your project happen. So I think Han and I really just, in our planning, I think we were like, we really just want to talk about, like, what our journey has been like and how we've gotten started, because I feel like we both come from different backgrounds.
And this is something that we talk about all the time, even with collaborating on this project. This has been major. I mean, we intended to meet twice a week and it's been pretty much every day. I love you for it.
No, I love it too. But I mean, it's like I wake up, text from Hannah. I go to sleep, text from Hannah. Like, it's just constant.
Yes. But we do have healthy boundaries.
We do. No, yes. Not to say that we don't have healthy boundaries.
But though, us both coming from, you know, we're both in film, but I'm in film production. George is in film studies. And so we both have very different skills that we know that we have and that we both play to with this project in particular.
Oh, yeah. Hannah, I'd love to hear you talk about film production, or you know, your experience, maybe what you've gained from it, how it operates. And we're also talking UBC specifically.
We're talking UBC specifically.
Disclaimer: there's
just to start. There's so many ways in. Not everybody chooses to study film to get into the industry, and that is also 100% valid. Personally, mm-hmm. I wanted to go to university. That was always something that I wanted for myself, not just film school, like not just like a conservatory program or like a one-year thing. I really wanted to go to college. I wanted to be able to study things that were not just film production. I wanted to be immersed in... I wanted to have friends that were not just doing the exact same thing as me, because in my personal thought, I'm like, what do I make films about if I'm only...
I mean, it's a life experience.
It's a life experience that I wanted to have. I also wanted to minor in gender, race, and social justice, and I wanted to do business. I'm now doing a master's in business, which is great.
Amazing.
Getting into the film program was... I'd literally wanted to do it since I was 13, so I'd been thinking about it for, like, I was prepping my application
for
a year.
Someone's manifesting.
I was manifesting. I literally had collages in my journal and, like, stickers on my wall, UBC film production.
I love it. You're so driven. You're so ambitious.
Thank you. So are you. So are you.
Thank you. I feel that.
I think that's why we work so well together.
I agree.
Yeah, what else do I say about the program? It's a four-year program.
Yeah. How much of it would you say is... tactical skills versus, because as a film production student, you still take some film studies classes, correct?
Yeah, you were required to take, I think it equates to like 2 film studies classes per year. And then you have a few like required film production courses per year, and you have to follow along in the specific structure,
right?
I think first and second year you don't get to make your own film, really. Like, you get to, you have school assignments where you make films, but the major thesis projects happen in third and fourth year. That could be frustrating. I found that frustrating in first year, where I was like, guys. But I also see the value, the major, major value. And this is something that, tying it all into film school, I think it's just a container that gives you the space to play around, to try all of these different roles, and to like have the safety of making mistakes. Because when else are you going to get to spend $5,000 on a film with a built-in crew that's all going to work for you for free, work with you for free, who also are getting something out of that process? And I think in first and second year, of course you want to be making your own films. Of course you want to be directing. And you can still be doing that. And I personally still was doing that. But there was so much, so much value in kind of having to sit in maybe some of the not, quote unquote, not as fun roles, or the roles that you're not particularly interested in, because there are so many roles that you don't even know you would enjoy.
Right.
And I also think, to the note of me wanting to be a producer, I've really, really appreciated having to work on the camera team, having to help with costumes, having to do all of these different things.
Everybody does sound, correct?
Everybody has to do sound. Also, because I'm like, it's important, first of all, to know what you're asking of people. But then also, when I'm on bigger sets and I'm acting, I'm looking around and I understand what all of these people are doing.
Right.
I know how I can be the easiest person to work with, because I know what their job is and how hard it is, and I can move for them, or I know what they're about to do, and I can be like, oh, I know you're going to put the tape there. Those types of things.
Which I feel like that kind of like forethought and knowledge of, I mean, that can really apply to any career. Like, if you're overseeing a bunch of people, or if you're organizing on a higher level as a producer does, it's good to know what the responsibilities and needs of the people under you are.
Always.
Because you can anticipate and make those adjustments.
You can
tell,
yeah, when producers haven't been on set or haven't had experience like doing the role, because they won't allot enough for a budget for makeup, or they won't give enough time for certain people to do their job. And it's like so, so important to have that understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got one way in as film production, a film production program. UBC specifically, I think what you were saying too is like, I mean, even within Vancouver being the film hub that it is, there's so many, like, there's plenty of different film schools and different film
Vancouver
programs.
Film School, Capilano, CapU.
Perhaps the unique positioning of UBC's film production is it makes you a little more well-rounded, if we can say that.
I think, yeah, like, I just think university as a whole, as opposed to, like, and again, it's different types of learning, different types of people. I am personally someone who is quite academically inclined, so I enjoy studying hard. I enjoy, you know, having to do subjects that are not related to film. Like, I kind of need that to feel like a person.
Yeah.
Because film can be so all-consuming. Yeah, I also really appreciate that UBC is a small program. There's only 13 of us in our cohort, which makes it like we have to have a huge hand in every single project.
Mm-hmm. And probably likely makes it a little more competitive to get into because it's
2% smaller. Acceptance rate.
And look at you, Hannah. And look at you here with us now, flourishing.
What about film studies, Georgia? What do you think that you are like really taking away in terms of being able to apply this to the film industry or perhaps like a more broader industry?
Yeah. I mean, like in my personal experience, I came into university thinking that I wanted to be a writer. And I do have a minor in creative writing, which I think has been really...
Georgia is doing a major in film studies, a minor in creative writing, and a master's all at the same time. I'm just going to say that. That is crazy. And doing a radio show and working.
You know, I like to be busy. I like to be busy. Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny. I feel like it's funny to hear it all at once like that because it does sound like a lot. I think you and I both know that we can take on a lot of things and still have a life. I'll say like the film studies aspect of it, especially I'm in film theory right now, which is just like the meat. I'm always comparing film studies to like, because when I say I'm in film studies, especially when I'm working my bar job or I'm waiting tables and people are like, oh, what are you studying? And I say film studies. They're like, oh, so you're learning how to work a camera. And then I go into, oh, you know, I often compare it to studying English literature or art history. It is the study of an art form. You are doing reading. You're looking at an artistic medium and then taking an academic lens on it. So you're reading theory about it. You are developing a really wide breadth and knowledge about it. You are developing your own critical ideas. I think one of the most beneficial things it's given me is an appreciation for great cinema because I get to consume so much of it and think critically about so much of it. It's given me a really clear understanding of what it is that I like. You know, going back to comparing it to English literature or something, like if you want to be a writer, you got to read a lot.
True.
You know, like that can really help you develop your own writing. And I think for me, film studies has been great because, you know, even in the little short films that I'm making, it's so apparent to me, I think, the influence that watching great cinema has had on how I see the camera, how I use the camera, you know, just like my appreciation for it and developing a sense of style.
I have a question for you.
Please.
I feel like, to me, it's so apparent that you come from a very like critical thinking academic background when you're discussing films. You put so much care and thought into your questions that you ask on this show and like the research and you know, I do a lot of like the editing tactical stuff and Georgia does a lot of the research and writing stuff. And would you say that you were already? Yeah, it works very well. But would you say that you were always very critical thinking mind and like writing mind? Or do you think that your degree has kind of shaped the way that you interact with these types of mediums?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. To some degree, yes, critical thinking mind. I mean, I think like I entered university. There was never, to be honest, a STEM bone in my body. Like I wasn't feeling passionate about science.
I was never going to do science
technology.
At university. I liked math, but
yeah,
that's about it.
I think it's been interesting, like, doing film production classes a little bit and getting involved in these like, you know, external communities, like film communities not related to my degree, because as a film studies student, if you are wanting to get into the industry, you can do that through journalism, you know, like be a critic or, you know, develop a project like this. It can prepare you for academia. You can go on to do a master's degree, a PhD, mm-hmm. or I think the real benefit of it is that you are being put in community with so many other people that love film and care about film. And that includes film production students, which is how I met Hannah. And then Hannah, we're shaking hands. how I met Hannah. And then, you know, like you meet people, you express an interest. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm doing these like fashion related things.
Let me model for you. Also, guys, please let me model for you.
Hannah's modeling aspirations are...
I've decided that
you're slaying recently.
Thank you.
Yeah. It puts you... I feel like, yeah, film studies has really positioned me to be in community with people that love and care about film. And while maybe like the bulk of what's taking up my time is writing papers and, you know, like from an academic sense, it's a lot of research in that way. Mm. But then for something that's going to translate into post-graduation, it's all about the communities that you're building and the opportunities that you're taking outside of school. I will say, I think, low-key, I think I slayed by taking a creative writing minor because
you
that
popped
just,
off with that one.
I love writing. I've always loved writing. And doing that minor in creative writing, I've been able to basically make it screenwriting as an element of my degree,
yeah.
Which comes in handy in my film writing classes all the time.
Oh, screenwriting is hard.
It's difficult.
I find writing dialogue so hard.
But it's so interesting because I watch films now and I'm thinking about the writing while I'm watching it and I'm thinking about the construction of
the
stories.
Can you help me with my final draft of my script?
Please.
Oh my God.
Please.
See, this is how you do it, you guys.
Script revisions. Well, even,
look at us connecting.
I mean, I'm not going to, I won't name drop, but even, we've only had two guests on, but one of the guests that we had on, I was just talking to her and she was like, you know, I was expressing, again, pitching yourself, I was expressing, yeah, like, I feel really passionately about writing and I've had these scripts and, you know, I've given some feedback in some other script workshops that have been happening and that's a way that I love spending my time. I read a lot of film scripts in my spare time. And she was like, hey, we're always looking for people to like sit in and provide feedback. Is that something you want to do? And I was like,
one
oh
of our
my
guests.
God.
Who like, do we think this is?
you know, it's okay. I mean, yeah. I mean, will it?
Anyway.
I'm so busy anyways. Well, who knows if that's going to happen or not, which is
But
totally
it's important
fine, but
to be having these conversations and like just
yeah.
planting that seed not only in your mind, but also in the other person's mind. Maybe mm-hmm. this is not the time that you're able to do that, but in the future down the line, either they might think of you and you might go, I'm actually looking for work. Let me reach out. And mm-hmm. they'll go, oh, I remember you.
Yeah. And I feel like that's just the value. Like you're finding a community. You're developing skills, mm-hmm. be it through film production, be it through, you know, like film studies, giving a certain appreciation and knowledge and then applying that in like independent communities or.
Well, before you do that, I just want
to. Oh, please.
I just want to say like on the note of going to film school, I think for me, I love film and I knew I wanted to do producing. But mm. I think that being at university, doing classes that are not just film, doing my business masters and all of this stuff has really, really, really like broadened my horizons of what is possible.
Mm.
And that's what I really appreciate about studying a university degree that relates to film is that I know and I'm confident that I can go into the film industry. And we are in the film industry. But I also know that if I wanted to do something related to media, maybe marketing in it, I could do that as well. Same with mm-hmm. your writing. You're able to translate that skill to many, many different types of jobs. And I think that, to me, is what has another layer of security for me.
Oh yeah.
And
well, I mean, I feel like to some extent I've heard stand-up comedians be like, I went to film school so I have $0. Like,
well, it's always that way.
But I think, well, okay, hot take here, if you're using the community of film school and if you're creating opportunities and
it's what you make out of
meeting,
it,
I think you really can get out what you put in.
Yeah, and we are talking from, we have a university background, not like a
true
a diploma background, which true. There are different types of film schools. Like there's a one-year program that you can do at VFS. I personally, mm-hmm. we can talk to someone who has that experience, but not to poop on VFS or anything.
No,
yeah. At all. But yeah, and also just like, this is something that I've been talking a lot about with we're in fourth year. That's crazy. Mm. We're in our fourth and final year. And it's that community that we've built. I've produced for the same director for 2 years now. And I know that in the future, I'm going to continue to work with her. I have friends applying to NYU and UCLA, and that expands my network. I mean, expands their network, but it also expands my network because, hey, now I know a producer in LA who,
look at you,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Oh, absolutely. Before we talk about our third little topic here, we're going to take a quick break.
Yes, we are.
We'll come back in just about 4 minutes, but we're gonna dive a little further into pitching and pitching your projects specifically. So stay tuned with us here on Film Picnic.
Tune your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Permitti or saxophone Len Wee. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalist saxophonist composers, and musicians of our great era since the 70s. Featuring artists such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Ehler, Solange, Ghostface Killah, Ornette Coleman, Sonny Rollins. That's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primitti or saxophone la nuit.
The leaves are browning, and I'm pissed! Does anybody relate to this? Oh my god, you're right, Angels. I gotta read some Discorder magazine.
Really, no one can be blamed but myself for holding out hope that this world could only contain a certain amount of cruelty.
God damn!
Were I to make a choice again, I would spend a week collecting all the broken glass and rusty shards I can from across the city and form a nest with which I will lay myself to my grave? Oh my god, I've never felt so seen. Thank you, Discorder magazine.
Finally, someone understands!
And for the rest of you in the Lower Mainland, find voices that you connect to in this issue of Discorder. You can find all of the distribution locations by visiting citr.ca/discorder/subscribe/.
It is time to get your spook on. And there's nothing like getting spooky with a good horror film. And this time, Slashback is coming right at you on October 24th. Slashback is a horror film that features Micah and her ragtag group of friends as they take on an alien invasion in their tiny Arctic hamlet. And it's up to them to fight back using makeshift weapons and horror movie knowledge. Arts Indigenous Student Advising is putting on Slashback, a film directed by an Inuit director and set in Nunavut. The horror film will be playing at the Norm Theater this October 24th. Only $5 entry for public, and it's free for all UBC Indigenous students. Doors at 5:45 p.m. We'll see you at the Norm Theater this October 24th. Experience the world of education this Saturday, October 26th at the Vancouver Convention Center. You can meet with top universities, graduate schools, and professional schools from Canada and around the world. Register online to stay up to date and check in at the fair to be eligible for prizes, including a free flight to anywhere in the world on Air Canada. Explore your future with Study and Go Abroad this October 26th by registering now at studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/. studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/.
Welcome back, folks. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And you're listening to
Film Picnic.
Beautiful. We're back to talk about a third way to get yourself into the film industry.
Jinx.
That was spooky.
Well, obviously, okay, so we just talked about our experiences going to university, not specifically film school, but I mean, yeah, BFAs, film production, film studies, BA, BFA. Mm. There are many other ways, but one way is don't go to school at all.
Skip it.
It is possible to get in. You do not need a degree to get into the film industry.
Nor a diploma.
Nor a diploma.
Nor a
degree.
A certificate.
Those things are both privileges. And also, some people don't want to study. Some people don't want to do that. And that is totally valid and totally okay. I will say, in my own biased opinion,
okay,
that I feel like perhaps, and I might be wrong here, disclaimer, that I don't know. I think school gives you a lot more room to, like, try out different things. I think maybe going directly into the industry, if you want to be a union member, if you want to be in the Directors Guild of Canada, DGC, for example, or IATSE, which is, like, lighting and grip and all of that, like, you kind of go into one role and, like, really, really work your way up.
Right.
And so maybe there's less room to, like, try out different hats, but it's all still valid. If you know you want to be an AD, go do that. You know, like you don't have to spend a year or 4 years at school.
If you want to work in post-production, go to a post-production house and edit and get in the lowest position you can and just work your way up. I mean, I feel like that. Well, you know, it's interesting to think about it in relation to film because there are so many film programs and film schools, especially within Vancouver.
But, and some of them are like $20,000 for 1 year. And I just think that that is crazy, period.
I mean,
personally.
There's so much to consider, like the investment and the experience that you want to have. Practical industry knowledge right away. Start making money right away.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, while they say that the film industry is, like, hard to get into, it is and can be quite lucrative. It pays quite well in comparison to a lot of different industries, especially in Vancouver. I think, you know, the unions keep the pay rate up. And, like, and an average PA, I think, gets $350 for 1 day, maybe a little bit more. Overtime is included. Obviously, this is union. This is not just, like, indie productions. But, like, you can earn a lot of money in a short period of time. That's not to say that it is not grueling work.
Yeah.
You know, those are, like, 12 to 15-hour days waking up at 4 or 5 a.m. sometimes.
I feel like being a PA, I will say in terms of trying on different hats, being a PA is a great way to...
It's wonderful.
You learn from all departments because you are the errand boy.
Like, yes.
You are assistant to everyone.
Everyone.
Essentially. Which just means that you get to learn a little bit about everybody's jobs, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about my friend here. I don't know. I'm not going to name them just for vibes.
For vibes. Maintain the mystique.
To maintain the mystique. But they were a PA on The Last of Us Slay. That was so
cool.
Pedro Pascal show.
Which has been filming all over British Columbia.
Yeah, I actually auditioned for that show twice. And it was the one audition that, like, really, like, usually I don't care if I don't get something, right. But that one, like, really hurt.
A little devastating.
I got a little too excited, but.
Well, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, there's plenty of opportunities.
There are plenty of opportunities. But yeah, they PA'd on The Last of Us, and they are someone that works really hard. People love to work with them. They are a charismatic baddie who, like, is just a.
Please describe me. I know you're not talking about me right now, but please describe me as charismatic baddie in all further communication.
Yeah, they're a charismatic baddie and they work well with others and they, like, are really down to help out and, you know what they're doing. And they work crazy hours. They work, like, sometimes they work 7 days a week, which I highly don't recommend. I think that's, don't kill yourself there, you guys. But
work-life balances.
But, you know, they've had so many awesome experiences on these sets where they've been able to talk to Pedro. They've been able to talk to the producers. They've been able to talk to like other assistant directors or like location managers who are then hiring them for their next projects. They then worked on Tron because it was the same assistant director or something like that.
Wow.
I might be wrong there, but
crazy.
It was definitely like, oh, I know you're a good worker. Can you be on this project too?
You're creating opportunities by selling yourself and pitching yourself.
And I will say, and that's not him being like, hey, nice to meet you. Like, hire me. It's him, like, showing up, putting
in
the time, being there, like, knowing what they're doing. Being a nice person to work with. Also working hard.
Really just, you know, if you're going to work in film, you got to develop yourself and be the kind of person that other people want to work with because that's how you get employed.
Exactly. And then they also have practical industry knowledge right away. And I will also say to the sentiment of, like, film school, that doesn't promise you a job in the industry at all.
Oh, no.
At all. And that's why we talk about building your communities and, you know, making those connections outside of school as well. Film school is a beautiful place and a system where you get to have it's a creative outlet. It's a creative space. You get to learn and grow. Mm-hmm. But you still have to be doing other things to get into the industry you want to be doing. Same as any other degree.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to just be employed as a psychologist after getting your psychology master's degree.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
A
degree doesn't really promise anything.
Which is a difficult reality to face sometimes after feeling like you're putting in so much time and energy and effort into it. But also, you know, like, as much as it's for learning and life experience, it's also just to be in, I feel like that's really what I've learned, is part of what you're paying for is to be in proximity with other people who care about the same things as you.
Yes.
Which is something that you can create and find on your own. Film school or university as a whole, I feel like, is providing you with that. Even like my roommate who's in
classic studies,
but she's, you know, she's studying ancient, ancient Middle Eastern, Near Eastern, Greek, Roman history. She's doing the academic work, but then she's going on these archaeological digs in the summertime. She's meeting people. She's talking to professors. Like, you know, you're putting in effort outside of what you're doing.
Because, 30 hours a week outside of school.
Because you're in proximity with people that care about the same thing as you. And that's how you create opportunity.
I will also say the last note is that me moving to Canada from Australia was like so major. So having a system in place where I was already kind of had to meet people and had to build community was super beneficial. It would have been a much harder move for me if I had moved and just went straight to work and went to figure it out. But again, that's me personally.
Yeah. You got to be the new kid on the block.
I got to be the new kid. Well, everyone was the new kid. That was the thing.
Right.
First year.
Right.
College.
Well, but you were...
I was the new kid.
New to Canada.
Yeah.
With the rest of our time, I think it would just... It really does fly by so fast on the show. Let's dive into
pitching a project.
You've pitched yourself. You've found a network of people. You've made it apparent what you're interested in. And then finally, when you're rounding up people and you have an idea, maybe you have a script. How do you make your project happen? You got to get people on board. How do you get people on board? You got to be able to pitch your project.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah, I would love to hear a little bit about your recent project. Someone's thesis film just got selected for production this year.
My thesis film is getting made. I'm directing. Yay. I'm so excited. I think it was a long process. Obviously, so for UBC in particular, there's many different ways to pitch. But, I mean, usually you'll include a script, a pitch video, and maybe some sort of presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I
will say I've also had the privilege of watching pitches through an independent collective and...
Indie Vision,
yes. Which
Tibet's coming on next week, you guys.
We'll have someone on next week to talk a little bit more about that.
He's the president.
But yeah, I think to some extent, pitching, whether you're in film school or you're outside of film school, it's going to require a lot of the same ingredients.
100%. And for me, so this is a story that I had I'd started writing it in April, and I had talked. So how it works is our peers vote; they get 30%. Our profs vote, they get 30%, and then an external panel of judges vote, they get 40%. So there's different elements of what's important there. I knew that I had come from a very strong producing background, so people believe in my ability to make the project happen. Mm-hmm. That, first and foremost, is very important. Not coming from a producing background, but like having a plan in place to make this project happen.
And knowing your strengths and how you can play it.
And knowing what you need. Like, maybe you don't know how to make it happen. Precisely. I know this, and that. This is what I need. That you should be very specific about. Mm-hmm. I'd started talking about my project to my peers in April. They knew I had been working on it.
It's the same age as Film Picnic.
It's the same age. I literally was POV Film Picnic and my script, same age.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
And I got feedback from my friends, my community of people who I would be making it with if it were selected.
Mm.
So kind of planting those seeds, telling them, you know, I already had my actors in mind. I was very, very well prepared. Communicating my ability and my position with the script was the first thing that was important to me.
Right.
Then within the pitch video, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, in the pitch video, you give your log line, which is like one or two sentences. What is this film? Then a synopsis. What is this film about? Then who are you to be making this film? I made a pitch video.
Why is it important that you're telling a story now?
Exactly. So it's a short story adapted from one of my my favorite author, my best friend Yenfei. Her book is published. She published a book in grade 12, and I'm adapting a story. So I really leaned into our friendship and the history there and the importance of this story in reconnecting and rekindling that and, like, communicating with each other through art.
I'm going to say it a million times, community. Look community. At this. Literally even finding just material that you care about
exactly.
and want to make happen.
And having someone who's like, yeah, you can adapt my story.
People that you know, yeah. Amazing. Sorry. Okay.
Had no, to, it's, had to highlight it's true. That. And then I already had my actors from the first drop of the script. Not everybody has to do that, but this is just was my process of pitching. So I had them in the pitch. What are they doing? What do they look like? What is their experience? Who are they to be acting in this story? And then what do I need? I need to find the other two actors. I need two locations, one of which I've already found. And the budget of this film is $5,000.
And coming in with those kind of quantitative and qualitative facts and, you know, knowledge about what the film is going to require to be produced, I feel like makes the pitch just that much more compelling mm-hmm. because not only do you really believe in an idea, but it's also proving that you know
really
how you're going to make
it
happen.
Yeah. And I also, like, we had to include a pitch package, which was all of our character breakdowns, artistic rationale, our budget, our, you know, everything. That is more of a formal pitch.
Right.
An informal pitch happens a lot in indie productions. Like, you might have an idea for a story, but you're not ready to pitch it to a producer, or you're not ready to build your team yet. Okay. Talking to a friend.
Yeah.
I will say something. I do get requests to produce, like, smaller productions, which is, thank you so much. I'm so honored. But it is really helpful. It is most helpful if you want someone to, like, produce your story and not really be super involved in maybe, like, the creative aspect. You need to really understand what that creative aspect is. You right. need to already kind of have a story in mind and, like, be able to explain that in a few sentences, because it's very hard when you're like, well, my story's kind of about this, and then it's...
You gotta have an elevator pitch.
You really... Yeah, and thank you, Georgia. Okay. That is so important. Knowing your log line, how do you describe your story in one or two sentences will take you so far, because so many people have story ideas, but it's really hard to talk about it concisely.
I feel like having a log line or having a concise way to describe the story also just communicates that you know what, like, you know what you're talking about, but you know what you're trying to achieve with the story, which again kind of goes back to what Hannah was saying about, like, why are you telling the story? If you don't know why you're telling it, or you are just like, oh, I'm going to sit down and, like, just write some kind of meandering thing.
That doesn't really get people excited to want to be a part of it.
It doesn't get people excited. It doesn't make people be like, oh, you know what? I need to be a part of making this happen. Like, even the pitches that I was able to watch at this independent collective, like, the most compelling ones are the ones that I was like, I mean, I wasn't on the jury, but they're, you know, watching them. I was like, you know what? This one should get made. I was thinking that about the projects where I could really, A, people were prepared, and I was like, okay, they have obviously put a lot of time and thought into this, and B, people that were just so passionate. And
yeah,
if you're passionate, you're putting in effort, you're putting in time, you know your story, and there's a reason behind what you're doing. I feel like that's the most just concrete thing, and what makes something so much more compelling and tangible is, like, why do you care about it?
Yeah.
Why now?
Yeah.
Which almost, I don't know. Filmmaking is storytelling. And
it is storytelling.
If you're going to tell a compelling story, have a reason.
It is.
Have an inspiration, have a muse.
And hey, if you have a story that you want to make and you don't want to, like, pitch it in a formal setting, that's also fine.
Mm.
Build your team. Go on Facebook groups. Go on, go to IndieVision. Go to, like, smaller communities of you know.
Text your friends.
Filmmakers. Text your friends.
Even if they're not film people, be like, hey, I honestly even... I'm not a big manifester, but I'll say
I'm a big manifester.
Writing something down or being like texting your friend and being like, hey, you know what? I'm thinking about making a film this weekend. Like, which, again, I guess that's like very small scale, perhaps even guerrilla style.
This is guerrilla style we're talking about.
Oh, I'm going to go to this protest, or I'm going to, like, go to this public event and I want to, like, make a little film out of it. Like, I don't know, telling your friend and being like, hey, I want to make this happen. It can be super informal. It can be super low key. But is there a reason you're doing it? Why are you doing it? Get someone on your team and put it out into the world and make it happen.
100%.
Yeah. I feel like that's just really the overarching message as
it's
well.
It's like, who are you? You're pitching yourself always.
Be self-motivated.
Like, be self-motivated. Every project you're on, you are you. And, like, people notice that. Obviously, we all have bad days, and that's totally valid and okay. But treating people with kindness, being a pleasant person to work with, being excited and passionate about the projects you're working on, especially as a director, as a producer. Oh my God, this is kind of off topic, but not at all. Your attitude and your mood trickles down to absolutely every single other person on the set. Mm-hmm. So
it's just like a, it's like a little petri dish. Like you're all just in there together, and it's a, you know, contained environment. If one person is not vibing, you know.
Even when everything is going wrong on a set and I'm producing it, I smile and the director doesn't know that anything's wrong. And I talk to the AD and we have our moment, and nobody on the cast knows that everything went to poop for a moment. Because we fix it. And then people think, oh my God, Hannah, like nothing, like everything's great. Like Hannah like is so relaxed when they're producing. And yeah, I am, but it's practicing radical calmness, because also your project is never more important than the people on it.
And that is on having a great producer. because
your project is never, ever, ever more important than the people on it. Okay? Listen.
And
on that note.
And on that note. Yeah, I feel like I hope somewhere in this episode you guys have been able to, you know, I feel like the ideas have been flowing in a certain kind of way today, but I think everything that we're talking about is like there's
much
nuggets of information, and there's actionable items, which I'm excited about. Like part of the reason we wanted to start Film Picnic was just to like motivate other people, because it is, you know, film, you do have to be so self-motivated if you want to make it happen.
No one is going to believe in you more than yourself.
No one's going to believe in you more than yourself. No one's posting ads being like, hey, I'm looking for a producer. I think I want to make this happen. Like, it's very, like...
who you know.
I'm calling you because I want you. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You know. So, I hope this episode today has inspired someone to make it happen. If you have an idea for a film and you want to make it happen, text... I'm urging you right now. Text someone that you know.
Text your friend
and say, hey...
Also, guys, we're going to have a little like film picnic every now and then, has little get-togethers. It's a great place to meet other people who are at similar or maybe different levels to you, and communicate and talk about, you know, what projects you've done, what projects you have going on, and what you're interested in. I think our first giant picnic that we had was a smashing success.
It was beautiful.
It was so fun.
I will say, there were positions.
Oh yeah, know? People got roles.
People got roles
people
from coming to the picnic. So
100%.
Not saying that you will get hired if you come to our next picnic, but it's not going to happen.
On that note, our camera died.
Thank you guys so much for joining us.
We love you.
On this rainy Vancouver morning, or whenever you're listening, I suppose.
Oh yeah.
Listeners.
Please enjoy the rest of your day. And don't forget to check us out on @FLMPicnic on Instagram.
We also have recordings of our episodes online at the CITR site. If you are an Instagram person, you can always find those links through the link in the bio on our Instagram. We have a link tree now.
Yes,
it's
we do.
Beautiful. We're also at Spotify.
Those episodes come out on Tuesday.
Yeah. We'll see you next week on Film Picnic as we continue debunking the film industry with meaningful conversation.
One picnic at a time.